there are already in place some employee and employer arrangements and agreements, and certainly would question why the language for the salary reduction would be in place, because as you know, a majority of employees that may take advantage of this could potentially, it is a bargainable item, and it may be something that, it may not necessarily be a salary reduction, but it could be in lieu of salary for future years. And if they are, if the intent of the bill is to try to give flexibility and to reward people for saving for their retirement, certainly I believe that this language could be prohibitive and not encapsulate a majority of the people that I think the intent of the authors would like to get. And I think that the key here is, let's not forget that one of the elements that they're trying to do here is make an awareness of health care costs and some of the savings that we need to start doing in the future. And I would argue that the Dash 1 amendments would narrow that considerably and unfortunately have quite a few people that potentially could be left out of the mix on those Dash 1s.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the wording that is being amended, it says any amount that is contributed by an employee to a health savings account, would what you're talking about be considered a contribution by an employee or an employer?
Mr. Chair, Committee Administrator Atkins, I think, I'm not sure if I, can you give me the question again?
The language that's in the bill is any amount that is contributed by an employee to a health savings account, and then we're adding, with the amendment, through salary reduction at the election of the employee. So I'm not sure if the bargained benefit that you're talking about would fit under the either the current wording or the amended wording.
I think my answer to that is that if you limit it to salary reduction, even though it's at the choice of an employee, you narrow the focus of the bill even more. And so then there's not going to be, that option is not going to be available. Whereas, as I think the gentleman noted, that there's some of these places, some of these plans are already in place and they're just wanting clarifying language. But it may be something that I think as HSAs and more people become aware of these options that are available to them, and keep in mind that there's savings not only to the employers, there's savings to the employees, so with taxes and some of those things that you can take advantage of it, so it does lower a cost to them. But I think the salary reduction portion, at least if I'm interpreting it correctly, would narrow it, and that's our concern.
Mm-hmm. I think I will. Yeah. Thank you, Bob. Michelle, could I have you come back up, please?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to clarify. Again, Michelle Deister, for the record. Right now, employees have no ability to do this at all without it affecting their salary for purposes of PERS. So certainly, you know, what we are seeking to do is to in fact narrow the bill, actually, so that if an employee chooses to make a contribution over and above what they are diverting from their salary for PERS purposes, that won't also be counted as PERS salary that employers then will have to match. So that is what the amendment seeks to do, and it's a very important component part of this bill.
Okay.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffer.
Without this amendment, would you rather this bill just not go through, or how do you feel about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you again. This committee, this bill does have a referral to Ways and Means. It's just scheduled for public hearing today. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2436? And then we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2436. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2392. And we have signed up. Bill Cross and Dan Swift.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross, and I work with the Oregon State Police Officers Association, and it's my pleasure to introduce Dan Swift, the president of the association, who will walk you through the problem that has precipitated the bill's introduction.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Daniel Swift. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. The OSPOA represents the rank and file state troopers, dispatchers, and forensic scientists that every day go out and enforce the laws of the state of Oregon for the Department of State Police. I'm here today, obviously, to testify on behalf of House Bill 2392, which would ensure that the men and women of this agency receive compensation which is commensurate with the professionalism they exhibit and consistent with the well-trained, professional, and caring police force that we all expect. HB 2392, quite simply, is modeled after legislation from the state of California. Several years back, the state of California became concerned with the quality of applicants for the Highway Patrol, and to ensure that they maintained the best possible applicant pool available, they crafted legislation mandating that state Highway Patrol wages be comparable or commensurate with the five largest cities in the state of California, what they were paying their law enforcement officers. In submitting a bill similar to the one crafted in California, this association is trying to craft a partial solution for a problem which is becoming increasingly acute in recent years. Specifically, it's the finding qualified applicants to become Oregon State Troopers. More importantly, we're also trying to develop a compensation system based on sound economic and business principles and the natural forces of the marketplace. Traditionally, when OSPOA would negotiate with the Department of Administrative Services, which of course conducts all employee bargaining negotiations for the state of Oregon with the employee groups, we've always been compared with the four surrounding state agencies, California, Washington, Nevada, and Idaho. On the surface, this looks fairly reasonable comparison, state agency to state law enforcement agency. However, there are some problems with this. One is California, Washington, and Nevada are all highway patrol agencies, whereas Oregon has a full-service state police agency. Highway patrol are mainly tasked with traffic enforcement. The Oregon State Police enforces all manner of laws and are expected to provide full police services wherever we go. An example of how this works is Oregon troopers will enforce laws that no Washington or California officer would ever be expected to enforce, the most obvious one being Oregon's fish and game laws. We enforce those on a consistent basis. California and Washington, those officers would call a fish and wildlife officer. They would not handle that type of situation. However, the largest fallacy in this approach is it completely ignores one of the most basic principles of marketing, which is who is your consumer? In this case, the product that the state of Oregon is actually selling is a career in law enforcement. And our consumers are native Oregonians. Rarely do the residents of this state apply for law enforcement jobs in other states. Most people want to be police officers in the communities in which they grew up. That's where they want to serve. So the Oregon State Police is not competing for applicants in other states. We're competing for them in this state. Furthermore, by using other states as a comparison, Oregon is trying to set its wages based on other states whose economies, labor laws, and wage scales are completely different than the economy, labor laws, and wage scales of this state. I don't have to tell this committee that the economy of Nevada has almost nothing in common with the economy of Oregon. So why should this state be setting its wages based on something it has absolutely no control over and almost nothing in common with? HB 2392 would merely require the state police receive a level of compensation equivalent to the average of the five largest cities in the state of Oregon, Portland, Beaverton, Gresham, Salem, and Eugene. It's the same jurisdiction this agency is in competition against when we're trying to recruit new troopers. The citizens of Oregon not only expect, but they demand only the highest caliber of people are allowed to wear the blue uniform of the Oregon State Police. But like any product, the end result is only as good as the quality of the raw material. In order to ensure we continue to attract and retain the highest quality recruits, we must have a competitive salary package. As an example of how badly the state police salaries have lagged in the last few years, I'll give you the following. By applying the criteria of HB 2392 to our current pay scales, a five-year OSP trooper with an Associate of Arts degree or an Intermediate DPSST certificate is 18.06% behind the market average of these five cities. A 10-year trooper with a bachelor's degree or his advanced certificate in DPSST is 11.73% behind the average market of these cities. In terms of real money, a 5-year trooper working side-by-side with a 5-year Gresham police officer is making $599 less per month. That same trooper side-by-side with a Portland police officer is making $1,245 less per month. If you are a brand new trooper with a young family just starting out in life and you look at these two jobs in the same career field, which one looks better to you? And when you consider that the state of Oregon invests approximately $100,000 in recruiting, hiring, and training every single state trooper, the potential financial loss of these trained officers to the state becomes significant. The last thing the state government wants to do is become the training ground for every other police agency in the state. And if anyone does not believe this is having an effect on our ability to recruit, I'm going to give you a very current example. On February 12th, we had central testing down at Jefferson High School. I was at that central testing. Of the approximately 270 invitations to attend central testing to become a state trooper that were sent out, we had about 80 people showed up. Of those, approximately 45 actually passed the physical agilities portions of the test to even take the written examination. 7 years ago, when I applied to the Oregon State Police, it was held on a Saturday and Sunday, a two-day event, and we had over 600 people applied and showed up for central testing for that two-day event. That's how far things have changed in just 7 short years. Now, I am well aware of the funding problems that this state has endured in the last few years, and no one I know, least of all myself, even remotely thinks the state currently has funding for an 18% increase in trooper wages. That is why HB 2392 would give the state until January 2011 to bring our wages competitive. I firmly feel that 5.5 years is more than reasonable in trying to bring the compensation package into line with our competition. The other problem that my members have faced in recent years has been the official position of the Department of Administrative Services that all state employees are equal. There is no difference in the jobs that we do. We're all treated the same, get the same compensation package. The response to this position is obviously we strongly disagree with it. I don't need to tell the members of this committee how dangerous a police officer's job is. It is one of the few occupations where it is the expectation that they will place themselves in harm's way as part of their daily duties. To put it another way, it was noted after 9/11 and the Twin Tower incident that police officers and firefighters were running into the Twin Towers while everybody else was running out. A more recent example of this occurred obviously in this building just a couple weeks ago. While everyone else was vacating the Senate chambers, it was state police troopers that were running into the Senate chambers to secure the problem. Now, I don't mention these two events to glorify in any way, shape, or form the job that state troopers do. We volunteered to do this job, and we knew the risks when we took it. But to be told that our job is no different from any other state worker is both insulting and demeaning. It also completely misses the point I made earlier about market analysis and customers. From the recruiting standpoint, OSP is offering a career in law enforcement. That is our target audience, and that is our customer pool we need to sell to. HB 2392 would simply require the state of Oregon to look at the state police force as the unique profession it is and compensate those dedicated people for the professionals that they are. I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward and allowing me to provide this testimony. I will now take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dan. Questions? Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. First, I'd just like to say I support this for very selfish reasons. I don't want my wife and daughter out on the highway without a trooper on the road. And your mere presence, I drive down here every day. Just see, you guys on the road slow me down and everybody else down, and we can't quantify that in saved lives and just slowing people down. But are there any numbers that show, and I'm a firm advocate of the apprenticeship programs, everyone knows, but I'm not interested in state police being an apprenticeship program for the rest of law enforcement departments, which I support them too, but that's not how I think we should run it, as you've very clearly pointed out. Are there any numbers that show exactly that kind of effect happening due to your lower compensation levels, where that we actually are acting as an apprenticeship program for other law enforcement agencies around the state?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, I don't have anything as to what our attrition rate is currently. The closest mm-hmm. comparison I had was what I saw last week when I was at Central Testing. However, I do know that when we went through the layoffs of the 129 troopers were laid off last year, We got approximately 85 to 90 of them eventually returned over a three-year, or excuse me, since 2003 have returned. The rest we did not get back. Now, there's a lot of reasons. I think that also plays a factor. One is the instability of the state's budget for the state police and fear of further layoffs. Now, which one, whether it's compensation or whether, you know, I have a family to protect, I can't honestly say which one is driving the numbers. I don't think, I'm not aware of any current numbers on what our attrition rate is to other agencies, just people are going for more pay. The best example I saw is the one where normally when state police are hiring for state troopers, everybody's standing in line to become a state trooper. And as I said, when I was there 6-7 years ago, we had over 600 people for central testing. And we've never had a problem filling our ranks before. And we are having a problem filling our ranks now, whether it's a combination of the layoffs, the instability of our budget, or our pay. I think it's a factor of all three. But our pay is definitely a component in there.
Thank you.
Representative Kitts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern, I guess, is over the data that's provided. I'm referencing this page right here, the Oregon State Police Association. I would ask the chair to indulge us some time to verify a few of these numbers. And I give you an example. Beaverton is not the largest city in Washington County. Hillsborough is. And if that's, I'd just like to look at some of these numbers and for verification, because I happen to know that one's for fact.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kitts, you're absolutely correct. Hillsborough just recently surpassed Beaverton as the largest city in Washington County. That's correct. The reason this was used, this comparison was made by the law firm of Gerritsen, Gold, Finrich, and Mackler, which is our association representative, does our negotiation. They also do a lot of representation for these cities. They have a statistician who compiled these numbers, and that was just recently compiled. At the time they were compiling, Beaverton was the bigger of the two cities, and it's just been recently replaced by Hillsborough. Comparison between the two is not that much. I mean, they didn't exceed it by a whole lot of people. So it's a fair comparison in our point of view, but I don't have a problem with you verifying the numbers, sir.
It was well over a year ago that Hillsborough surpassed Beaverton, just as an FYI. Not that I'm particularly affectionate for Beaverton, but I'm not, but I am for Hillsborough, and we are the largest.
Mr. Chair, I'll remind the members of the citizens of Beaverton when the representative runs for governor.
I think the bill doesn't say five largest cities. It just mentions five cities. So it doesn't, no reference to their size in the bill. Representative Eskimo.
Yes, and I think what we've kind of reflected upon is the complexity of what is going on here. I did quite a case study on, and we had a fatality up on Highway 140 where four people were lost their lives in a car wreck. We at that time did not have one state trooper on duty in Jackson or Klamath County because of the lack of troopers. In 1976, we had 34 state troopers in Jackson County. Today we have 16. Population has gone up 60%. I think that, coupled with the layoffs, that this department has taken the hits on their budget, where we've taken that and put it into the general fund, I think that, as well as instability and lack of being able to be competitive, and what I mean by that is I think we have four or five state troopers, ex-state troopers now, that work in the city of Medford. They are gravitating, and what we're turning our state police into is a farm club for bigger municipalities. And having said that, I think the whole problem does not stem with just this competition with salary. I think that's one of the pieces of the puzzle. But I think it's up to us in this building to figure out a better way to fund state police, at least get it back to the level where it was in the 70s, which is twice of what it is today. And still have 60% more population. And by the way, I'm going to get your license number so they can have it.
It's our Xavier's 802.
Right.
Yeah, right. That's probably mine. Yeah.
XRS 802. It's a 2001 Honda Civic 4-door.
Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chairman, I'd refer you to page 2 of the written testimony provided, where the statement was HB 2392 merely requires that the Oregon State Troopers will receive a level of compensation equivalent to the average of the five largest cities in the state of Oregon, Portland, Beaverton, Gresham, Salem, and Eugene.
So. Mr. Chair.
Irregardless, the bill states, just names five cities. And that's what we're going to act on. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, actually this bill was a redo of a bill introduced 2 years ago, at which time the city of Beaverton was larger than Hillsboro, and when we had prepared that testimony, and I think this testimony is an updated version of that testimony, we were referring to the five largest cities, and Representative Kitts has correctly pointed out that Hillsboro is no longer, but the bill, as you've pointed out, Chair Brown, is reflective just of five cities.
And the city of Beaverton is trying to rectify that regarding the size.
So I've heard.
And very well may be challenging Portland. So. You know, the problem you mentioned with the salaries and recruiting is not only with the state police here, but there's a great inequity between the larger police entities in Oregon and the smaller cities in Oregon. I have in my couple of cities in my district that have trained, gone to the cost of training police officers, getting them back and get them on the ground, and then as soon as they complete their training period at that city, then they go up to Portland, or they go up to Multnomah County or to some other city in Oregon that can pay a higher wage, and then that small city then is out the cost of training that officer, and they start all over again, so they end up being the training ground for officers going to the larger cities. So there's an inequity there too that I tried to rectify last time, didn't get done. Thank you. Representative Hovel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to echo what Representative Esquivel has said. I too am very concerned that we're losing quality folks, and I see this not just a problem with the state police, but I know our university systems have a hard time keeping the top quality professors and people that bring in the grant monies that our university systems desperately need. And so I think this problem, it goes throughout many industries, and I'm very supportive of making the state police competitive so we can keep top quality troopers on the highways to serve our citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As somebody who's worked very closely with public safety and addiction issues, particularly, I think at this particularly critical point of Oregon's history, that where methamphetamine is such a big issue, particularly coming up from out of state from the bigger labs, that it's very important to have effective law enforcement. In fact, I gave Bill a study that I saw recently that said that conventional law enforcement interdiction services are much more effective than multiplying prison terms for drug offenders. And so I think keeping that type of literature in mind, it's very important that the troopers that are out in the field are making a decent living, which is what I think this all comes down to.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2392? And none. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2392. Janet, do we have anything else this morning?
No.
Any bills? Nope. Introduce. The committee have anything else? Seeing none, then we are adjourned.
Just thank you.